Hear ye, hear ye. This is the Awakened Tarot Podcast. You are talking with Jacqueline Kitzman. Hey, everyone. I'm so excited to be recording this episode that we're doing today on the Hanged Man. I believe Gabe's got some stars and shit ready that he's getting ready to go on here as well. And I really hope y'all enjoyed our comeback after our month and a half long break with the interview that I had with Anthony on Justice. It was super fun. And I got, as I was like listening back to the episode before we posted it, I was like, published it. I mean, I was like, wow, this is really good. So I hope y'all enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed getting to chat with and interview Anthony. This is everyone's absolute favorite part of the podcast. Let's talk about current events. And we do have quite a bit of meat to dig into. As I'm recording this, it is Sunday, April 14th at 2:25. So if by the time you're listening to this, you're like, Jacqueline, there's been like a blah, 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 a lot more information, please know that as of right now, 2:26 p.m., April 14th, this is the information I've got. Starting off with what happened in Australia this past weekend, there was a mass stabbing at a mall in Sydney, Australia, a shopping center. Six people were killed, including a mother of a small child. 8 to 9 other people were stabbed and are in the hospital. I don't know much more on the incident, and I don't know much more about the victims of the stabbing beyond the mother and the child who died. I have family that live in Sydney, and so that was kind of like an incredibly sad situation, and this is an incredibly sad situation. Going forward from there, this is the part that I'm going to try to do really quickly and concisely, but I also want to make sure I lay out the facts. Israel killed 7 Iranian government officials at the Iranian embassy, I believe, in Syria. This is technically an act of war. We got intel that they would be responding, which of course they would respond. Israel killed 7 of their government officials, which I don't want to get into like the nuance of that. I'm just reporting like the facts. So then Israel sent back, I think, between 200 and 300 missiles is what is actually confirmed. The Iron Dome and the U.S. was able to shoot down, I believe they said like 90+% of these. A couple did hit. There were no casualties, but a small 10-year-old child was injured by falling debris and I believe is being hospitalized. So Israel has said today that they would consider this an act of war on Iran's part, which obviously yes, but then also they're the ones that targeted 7 Iranian officials. So it may seem complicated, but it's just really not that complicated. Now here's where things get a little more dire. Iran was supported by Russia. I believe Russia sent like 400,000 plus troops to Iran. Yemen also sent troops to support Iran. And then, of course, you've got the U.S., which has said up and down that they will protect and defend Israel, the U.K. doing the same. As all of this kind of happens, it's important to remember that there is also a war happening in Ukraine. A lot of shit right now is complicated and confusing, and yet at the same time, like, the cards are out on the table. Like, a lot of people are coming back and forth saying World War III. And what we're watching right now, I think calling it any kind of world war right now is jumping the gun just a tad, only because we don't know what's going to happen next. I don't want to like garner fear, but what I do want to say is that things aren't looking good overall in the Middle East. Things get murkier when you look at the geopolitical politics across the globe and what's going on right now. So I think, you know, first and foremost, it is important to have the heart of a humanitarian overall. There is still a genocide happening in Palestine. There are still innocent men, women, and children in Palestine. It is an act of genocide. And while it's really easy to look at all of this other stuff that is happening in the same place, we cannot look away from it is also happening there. And we also need to be saving our attention for what is happening in places like the Congo and in Myanmar. There's just a lot happening. And I know that for a lot of people, especially people who are very sensitive, you can doom scroll and you can get news fatigue. But I think overall, why all of this is important to know is because if you're pulling cards right now and they're coming out wonky, they're coming out wonky and they're coming out confusing because a lot of things in the air right now are wonky and confusing and frantic and chaotic. And that we are going to, and even if we don't give a shit about what's happening, tarot is a reflection of humanity. You can't separate what's happening to other humans from what the cards are doing as a whole. So that's why we do all of this. And more information is going to come out. More things even may happen before this episode comes out, though we're going to try and get it out ASAP. Okay, yeah. Just if you can find a healthy balance between staying educated and doom scrolling, this is the time I would encourage you to do that, especially if you're reading cards and you're like, I just don't get it. None of the cards make sense. I would consider looking at what's happening on like a global collective level. Like I said, today we are talking about the Hanged Man, and I'll describe the card really quick. Of course, I'm using the Smith Rider-Waite deck. So the Hanged Man is like there's a tree, kind of like post thing. It doesn't actually look like a tree, but it's supposed to kind of like look like a, imagine a cross if the top like vertical part of the cross was gone. So it was just like the bottom part of the cross and then the horizontal branch. The Hanged Man has their foot tied to the top horizontal branch and is hanging one leg out, the other leg kind of crossed back so that their legs look like an upside down four. Their arms are behind their back, like the other tied or holding onto the back of the tree. And they're around their head towards the bottom of the card is this circle of light. Some of the symbology here and the imagery here is depicting, of course, like it's talking about things like acceptance of something. So you're looking at like the Odin myth from Norse mythology, which is talking about like I believe Odin to gain wisdom hung himself upside down from a tree to gain wisdom, and that's what's happening in the Hangman. It's kind of a form of acceptance. This also has ties to the Bible, where I believe it was Peter. So for those who didn't grow up religious, essentially what happens is that as Jesus is imprisoned before he's crucified, Jesus tells Peter that he will deny him three times before the sun rises, essentially. And Peter's like, "Oh my God, no, Jesus, I would never." And then Peter, like immediately, like three different people ask him, like, "Hey, are you a follower of Jesus Christ?" And he says, "No." And then another person asks, he does this thrice. And then eventually Peter goes on to seek forgiveness. Jesus forgives him once he's resurrected. And then Peter goes on to preach the word of Christ, essentially preach the word of Christianity of God, and eventually is imprisoned and they decide to crucify Peter. Peter refuses to be crucified upright. He accepts his death, but he demands to be crucified upside down as a form of respect. So when we're looking at the Hanged Man, and we're also looking at like the, of course, again, like there are heavy, heavy nods to the Norse mythology of Odin here, but it's also looking at like the biblical reference of Peter, the decision that, fine, I'm gonna do something, but I'm gonna do it on my own terms. I'm gonna die, but I'm gonna do it on my own terms because I know something that you don't know. Or I'm learning something, I have something you don't have. And the Hanged Man is the kind of this essence, of it, like if you're going to put one word to it, like the word would be acceptance. Like acceptance. It's you are putting yourself in an uncomfortable position that you know is uncomfortable, but you're not raging against the discomfort. You're sitting in it. A really good microcosm example of this would be like when people go into labor and they like and they get to the point where they have to like the truth of labor is that there's no easy way to get a baby out, and you kind of like, especially like when it's time to have the baby, like regardless of whether that's a cesarean section, a C-section, or that's a vaginal birth, the point is that like whether you have an epidural or it's unmedicated, the point is that like there is the discomfort of having to go through the process of ripping open some part of your body to get a human into the world. So Birth and death are very closely related. You can't have one without the other, and they're both aspects of coming into a place where you are and then going to a place you don't know shit about. And the hanged man process here, when you're thinking about birth, is just, I guess, oh fuck, I guess we're doing it. I guess I gotta get this baby out. Like, whether, you have to kind of embrace the discomfort of it and be like, okay, like, we're here, we have to do it. There's no other choice. And that's kind of the essence of the hanged man. What we're gonna do now is I'm going to open up the lovely pictorial key to the tarot by Arthur Edward Waite, everybody's favorite. Human. I'm kidding, only kind of. Okay, the hanged man. The gallows from which he is suspended forms a tau cross, TAU. Okay, listen, side note here, I got a review that was like, I highly encourage the host, like, one that's a constructive criticism, so I'm not mad about it. But basically, it was saying, like, I encourage the host to look up the pronunciation of the words that they're reading, and I do my very best. And I do Google things, but I'm just like, there are words I'm not going to pronounce right. And even if I do pronounce them right, I'm not going to have the inflection or the dialect, or I'm not going to be able to make potentially like the sound right. So that's why I spell it. And they may have been referring to earlier episodes before I started spelling the words, but I am spelling them. Like, I am just a human at the end of the day, and I desperately care about, portraying things correctly, especially pronunciation and words. But again, I am only human, so the best I can do is then spell it, but forms a tau cross, which is TAU. While the figure from the position of the legs forms a filfot, FYLFOT cross. There is a nimbus about the head of the seeming martyr. It should be noted, one, that the tree of sacrifice is living wood with leaves thereon. Two, that the face expresses deep entrancement, not suffering. And three, that the figure as a whole suggests life in suspension, but life and not death. It is a card of profound significance, but all the significance is veiled. One of his editors suggests that Eliphas Levi, did not know the meaning, which is unquestionable. Nor did the editor himself. It has been called falsely a card of martyrdom. I would just like to say that you used the word martyr and now you're saying it's falsely called. Okay. It has been called falsely a card of martyrdom, a card of prudence, a card of great work, a card of duty. But we may exhaust all published interpretations and find only vanity. I will say very simply on my own part that it expresses the relation in one of its aspects between the divine and the universe. He who can understand that the story of his higher nature is embedded in his symbolism will receive intimations concerning a great awakening that is possible and will know that after the sacred mystery of death, there is a glorious mystery of resurrection. So, the mystery of death is the death card, and then the mystery of resurrection is temperance, which I do think it's kind of cool that that got pointed out here or got, kind of touched on. Essentially, what Arthur is saying here is, listen, this martyr that's on the cross, it's not a card of martyrdom. In fact, he actually says that that we can look at it almost as a card of vanity, almost like a willingness to put yours to do something, like, because one of the things here, well, that I find interesting is that being a martyr, especially in some religions, and it's exceptionally potent right now, where we look at people who are being killed in Palestine, they are referring to them, they were referring to their family members and friends and community members who have died as martyrs because they are dying because of their faith. And they're not wrong. And there is this holy connotation to the concept of martyr, which, is, I think, like, martyr at its core is supposed to be like a sacred, very sad, sacred honor. It's not something that you look at and you're like, ah, fuck yeah, a martyr. But it's like it holds a lot of weight. Like, it holds a lot of weight that somebody sacrificed everything in the name of their principles, their morals, their religion, their beliefs. But we also kind of, especially I think in like American colloquialism, like we will look at people and be like, ugh, don't be a martyr. Like someone who does something that takes away from themselves, expends too much energy, people pleasing, doing something with the idea that you're doing something and doing a job well done, you're overextending yourself so that you can be like, ha, look at what all I've done. And then somebody would be like, well, don't be a martyr. So we have these two different kinds of like meanings behind that word, and the connotations behind them. And that is where Arthur Edward Waite is talking about vanity. He's talking about martyrdom and vanity in that second sense, not the first sense, which is almost not, you know, it's an honor. It's a very sad and heavy honor to receive. Whereas the second form does kind of like talk about and does have that connotation of vanity. And what's interesting is that Arthur Edward Waite is kind of saying that, like, if I go back and I read the sentence, it says, it has been called falsely a card of martyrdom, a card of prudence, a card of the great work, a card of duty, but we may exhaust all published interpretations and find only vanity. So it's almost as if he's saying, like, yeah, take all of that away. It's literally just vanity. Like, this is a person who wanted information, wanted knowledge, wanted something, and then did something unnecessary to do that. And like, what I find interesting here is that the concept of getting to the hanged man is essentially that, like, you are suspended from a place. You're suspended from something that you can't get away from. And sometimes you put yourself there and sometimes you don't. Sometimes it's a situation you got yourself into accidentally. Sometimes you don't have a choice and you kind of have to go through it and make the best of it. And what are you learning and what are you going to do? You know, not bad things don't all happen for a reason. I think that there's a lot of toxic positivity in that. And I think one of the things that we work through in The Hanged Man is kind of this form of radical acceptance where instead of like having a bad thing happen to you and you're like, oh, like this all happened for a reason and it was fated. Instead, you take a step back and you kind of like, I was just a flower that grew in a meadow. I didn't do anything wrong and someone picked me and that fucking sucks. What do I do with it? You know, what do you do with an act of God? What do you do with an act of random whatever? What do you do with that? How do you go forward? How do you look at a tree that got downed like in your backyard and how do you take that tree and turn it into something useful like firewood or like shelter? Like it's not looking at something being like, oh, thank God this tree fell, but it is like, hey, that fucking sucks. I guess I'll do something with it. Kind of a way to repurpose the thing that happened, not because it was supposed to happen to you, but because sometimes we don't have a choice but to repurpose the thing that happened. And I think that's some of the knowledge that we're gaining in The Hanged Man. I'm going to take a step here and I'm going to read the traditional upright and reversed meaning. So, upright, wisdom, circumspection, discernment, trial, sacrifice, intuition, divination, prophecy. And then reversed is selfishness, the crowd, body politic. So I would say that one of the things that I really like in the upright version here is divination and prophecy, kind of like going back to that Odin myth specifically, where Odin sacrificed something for insight, to see the future, to know what to do next, for that wisdom. And so I like the idea of this acceptance of the hanged man, like really allows you to clear-headedly see what's next, even if that thing that's next is death. And rather than being like, fuck, and fighting and thrashing against it, you tie yourself to it and you just kind of, okay, here we go. Like, what is that quote from The Emperor's New Groove when Cusco and what is his friend's name? Cusco and his friend are going down, like about to go down the waterfall, and Cusco goes, booyah. Like it's kind of that idea. And then in the reversed, it's selfishness, you know, the crowd, body politic. And I think here it's kind of referencing to like, why are you here? Why are you in this position? What led you here? Like, are you a victim? Are you a martyr? Are you someone who took on too much and now you're here and you kind of have to be like, okay, yeah, like find that radical acceptance of, yeah, I committed to too much and I have to get through it. But now I have this knowledge. I know how much spoons I have going forward. What do I do with that? And then you kind of make that change going forward. I don't necessarily completely disagree with all of the definitions or the words put here. I do think that in The Hanged Man, we are kind of gifted the knowledge of presence. I think in The Hanged Man, we can't look back on the past. We can't go into the future. What The Hanged Man gives us is the gift of being completely present in whatever the moment we're in. We're completely stuck exactly where we are. And I think that one of the things that people, like, you know, looking at people who are given terminal diagnoses, I've never been given that, but, you know, so I don't want to speak too much on that, but this kind of idea where they talk about, like, all we have is the now. I can't focus too much on why this happened. I can't focus too much on what's going to happen next. I know what's going to happen next. All I can do is focus on my every single day, every moment that I'm still here and what I do with that time. And it's not about trying to escape the condition, because you can't. It's just about this radical acceptance of, I'm here, and sometimes my presence is crying. Sometimes the best I can do in the present moment is cry, and sometimes the best I can do is be angry. But all of that holds weight in the present. All of that has significance, has value, has wisdom. All of that emotion, all of that stuff that's going on for us in the moment, in the midst of whatever. You know, that's what's real. That's what's true. That's what we can do something about. We can do something about now, where we are now. And that's what we have control over. We can't go back and change the past, and we can't do anything about the future other than live through the present. And I think that is one of the biggest lessons of The Hanged Man, just as an esoteric card. What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to go ahead and read what I have written about The Hanged Man, and then all the questions that I wrote for it. So this is what I wrote in my Deathline workbook. Here we agree to suspend ourselves in silent observation. The tree we are tethered to is in fact the tree of knowledge, and during our stay here, we simply observe. We watch, take mental notes, succumb to being the student who finally realized how little they actually understand of the world. In The Hanged Man, we listen. We come here from justice, because in justice we come to terms with our deepest and most human flaws, and we reside here with the need now to learn from example. This is the essence of humility. The difference between The Hanged Man and Hermit is that in The Hermit we don't always like what we see because it hurts us, so we hold the truth away in a lantern. But in The Hanged Man, the light emanates from our heads and we embrace our flaws. We are not embarrassed by what we don't know. We are simply ready to be enlightened. This is the truest form of acceptance. So here are the questions I wrote. What are we being asked to observe? What form of knowledge are we being asked to tether ourselves to? How can we embrace that knowledge? In what way can we use that knowledge going forward? So essentially what I wrote just kind of about The Hanged Man is that this is, you know, interesting that Arthur Edward Waite talked about selfishness and vanity, whereas when I was writing this back all the way back in like 2018 or 2019, like I talked about, you know, the humility of having to flaws and all hang yourself from somewhere where people have to come look at you, almost like if it were like the medieval stocks, you know, those things that like you put your arms and your head through and people walk by. Now, I think that was a cruel and unusual form of punishment and was stupid. However, like there is a form of humility of putting yourself in a vulnerable position and having to be there and just take what comes at you. And so in The Hanged Man, we kind of have this humility of being like, yo, like I did a lot of things, maybe not perfectly, but I'm kind of here to like learn from it and accept it. Where in The Hanged Man, here's a really good example of kind of Hanged Man energy. When I was in college, I took a lot of creative writing classes because that's what I was trying to get my bachelor's in. I was writing and communications with a focus in creative writing. And one of the things that we had to do was we would have to write short stories or poetry. And we would bring those pieces of work to class. And we would have to like sit in the middle of the room or sit at a table and everybody would have a printed out piece of the work that we turned in, and then everyone would read it, take notes, tear it apart, say what they loved, say what they hated, say what they were confused about, say how they would have done it differently or what they actually liked, and you couldn't say anything. You just had to sit there and be quiet. You weren't allowed to say, "Well, actually, I meant this." You weren't allowed to do anything. All you could do was sit there while a room of like 30 to 50 people just all talked about what you wrote about, and people would either, you'd have like really kind people who would have like a lot of constructive things or really gentle things to say, or even really nice things to say. And then you'd have other people be like, "This is shit. This is absolute shit." And then your teacher would have one where he would underline, like the professor would underline where he would have stopped reading if he wasn't getting paid to read all of our shit. And we just had to look at it. And then at the end of class, like we weren't allowed to talk about it, but we were given everybody's paper, all their marks, all of their commentary. We were given it. And then we had to take all of those things, rewrite what we'd written, and then write a paper on what we agreed with, what we disagreed with, how our classmates helped us. And we had to sit there and be like, we had to take away ourselves from the ego of our art and look at it from a different, from the perspective of people around us. And that was a very hanged man thing, I think, to do, to have an ego and to understand the ego and to have feelings and have to process like the hurt and the pain and the glee and the pride and all of that. And then at the same time, you have to write a paper saying why people who said the worst thing you've ever heard about your work, why it was important for you to hear that. And there we deal with vanity and there we deal with humility. And that is like some big, big lessons in the Hanged Man. And it's also so important because this is the card right before death. This is the card we are in right before death comes for us. And the thing about the Hanged Man is that as we move into death, we finally untangle ourselves from the stalk, from this tree, from anything. We untangle ourselves from it. And we walk to death. We go towards where death is coming and we sit there. We just wait for it. Like, okay, it's my time. It's my time. And I think when we're pulling the Hanged Man in readings, when I pull it in readings for people, I always kind of ask, where are you right now? Like where is your head at about this? Like if it's a relationship reading, tell me about how you feel. Tell me about where you feel stuck. Tell me about where you want to be. Tell me about what you're anchoring yourself to. And if it's about work or anything else, like I always just ask, where are you? What do you actually want? What do you know about the situation? Are you guessing? And if you like for a relationship, for instance, if somebody is like, "I just don't know how my partner feels about me," and I were to pull this card, I'd be like, "Do you have an actual reason to think? Do you have an actual reason to think that something is wrong, or are you just anxious?" And if you have an actual reason to think that something is wrong or you're not being treated properly, why are you staying? Hanged Man. Same thing in same capacity with work or in anything else. Why are you here? What is tying you to here? Are you keeping yourself here? Why are you doing that? It really kind of presents us this ability to question our presence. Sometimes there's something to learn from a situation. Sometimes if it pops up in the reverse, it's like saying like, "Hey, like it might be kind of important for you to kind of flip the perspective." Like if you pull the Hanged Man in reverse about like a relationship reading or a business reading or just about like what's my purpose in life and you pull this card, it's probably saying like, "Hey, flip the perspective. What if everything you were thinking about, do it in the opposite way? Think about it in a completely different, opposite, out of the box way. Does that change anything for you?" It's an invitation not to think about the past or think about the future, but to take where you are and then flip it on its head. And that's hard. I'm not like, this card is not supposed to be easy peasy. It is hard. It's what is it? It's easy peasy lemon squeezy or hard lemon hard, in that capacity. But it's not an easy card. Now, once you accept it and you get comfortable in the discomfort, everything around you moves more smoothly around you. But it doesn't make the process of moving into Hanged Man any easier. Kind of this waiting, this purgatory, this, okay, like, how is this going to change things? After I remove myself and I gain this knowledge, I don't know necessarily what I'm walking into. Is that okay? Is that okay? And it's just gotta be okay. And it is a vulnerable thing. And it can be tied very well to vanity. And it kind of like is an interplay with both of those things. And I think that's what makes this card really special as the third to last card in the death line, because it really is the last time that you as a person are contemplating your existence, your actions, anything. Like you move there from justice. So you've already been judged in this card. Like you've already gotten the judge. Either your heart was lighter than the feather or heavier than the feather. And now you're just here in the hanged man. I'm like, okay, like, well, I can't change anything about my past. I can't do anything about what the feather versus my heart weighed. I'm just here. What do I do going forward? What do I do going forward? And that is the hanged man. It's this moment of, okay, well, I'm here. So how do I adjust? And, you know, the beauty of this is it is kind of a chance for you to accept the fact that you fucked a lot of shit up. Or to accept the fact that, like, you tried to do everything as perfectly as you could and it still didn't work out. And that sucks. How can you in the present get yourself to a point where you feel stabilized? What can you learn from it and take it into the change? And that's the hanged man. I hope that made sense. I want to take a moment here to just kind of let people, oh, right, the collective reading. I lied to you all. Listen, this is my podcast. You would think. Wah. Okay, let's see what we got. There, collective reading. I got the Eight of Wands. So here's immediately what I want you to take from this card and the collective energy. Things are moving quickly. Things are moving quickly. Things that you've put into place, things that you had no part of, everything is moving fast. It's going to be fast paced. You know, I think one of the things here that's not lost on me is that you've got the Eight of Wands, which almost look like missiles flying through the sky. And I'm not saying that like we need to be like overly concerned, but I do think that like there is a very strong connection between what's happening in the world and to also kind of like mirroring what's happening in the decisions in our lives. And that's why we learn about collective energy. That's why we do current events. So I would just kind of take note of where things land. Take note of where they land. Don't panic if things start to move really fast. Find a place to watch from a distance safely, and then find a way to use the as you see where things land, pick up what you can, and use those lessons, use those things to move safely forward. Don't be afraid of things moving fast. Just have enough self-awareness to see where everything lands and then make decisions from there. Okay. Since I've finished the collective reading, I just wanted to also take a moment to announce that I am taking readings at this point. During the week, Monday through Thursday, I'm free anytime after 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. And then I have almost full availability on Fridays and weekends. So if you were thinking about booking a reading with me, you can email me at awakenedtarotnashville@gmail.com, or you can find me on Instagram. My @ is @awakenedtarot, and you can just send me a DM. I check pretty frequently, my message requests and stuff like that. I think Gabe is gonna take stars and shit from here. Goodbye.
Is that what you're gonna call it, though?
Is that what you're gonna call it?
Do I get to name it?
Stars and shit!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Stars and Shit, your dose of astrology with Gabe. I want to just remind everybody that it was Jacqueline who, off the cuff, named this segment Stars and Shit. It is not my brainchild, just to, I guess, mostly apologize for the absolute inaccuracy and profanity of the name as a whole. So thanks for sticking around. For those of you who are new here, this is a short segment where I talk about some astrology and tie it back to tarot. So feel free to take this in. Today I'm doing something pretty cool. I'm doing horoscopes. I don't always do horoscopes. There's a lot of people doing horoscopes, so I try to kind of stand out a little bit, and I know that this is a tarot podcast, so I don't want to make it all about astrology. And horoscopes are a dime a dozen. You can go on Instagram and find a horoscope. You know, are they accurate all the time? I don't know about that, but that's not really for me to say. It's a very subjective study. So we're just going to talk about some transits that are coming up in the future here, a pretty big one, and then we'll do some horoscopes, and we'll talk about how to incorporate tarot into your horoscopes. So first things first, I want to talk about April 19th and April 20th. The 19th, there is a number of things going on, and I would really lump both of these days together, but I want to break them up just because there's a number of things. There's a Mercury-Venus conjunction, the Sun is moving into Taurus, and Mars is sextile Jupiter and Uranus. I don't always talk about sextiles, but they are a harmonious aspect. Usually things are working pretty well together during a sextile. It's 60 degrees. It is an aspect that is of the nature of Venus. So altogether, without breaking it down too far, we're going to maybe experience some temperance. And I wrote that down in reference to the temperance card. Some sort of clarity coming into light, head versus heart. With that, there can also be some tension and confusion in being illuminated to some sort of truth or having to make a quick decision based on incomplete information and trying to understand it at the same time. There can also be an overpronounced and underplanned kind of thing going on, like running on a vibe. And then moving toward what you know works for you. Fate is on your side kind of feeling. Taking action on a new idea. That would be the Mars relationship to Jupiter and Uranus. Coming into the next thing, Jupiter and Uranus are conjoining. They're both very slow-moving planets. This is not something that happens very often, and they have been slowly coming together in Taurus for the past year and a half, 2 years. It's been in the air supply, I guess you could say. Jupiter and Uranus is inspiration, improvisation, lightning-fast developments, fireworks. There was a talk about Jupiter Uranus that I listened to some time ago, but one thing that stuck with me is the character of the genie in Aladdin. Just how big and pronounced and off the cuff and sporadic that character is in bringing that kind of life into the conversation, into the story, played by Robin Williams. And after his death, maybe before his death too, I'm sure the story was out there, but it seemed to circulate in the news and social media a little bit better about how little he got paid for that role and, of course, how amazing of a job that he did on the role, but also how many takes he had and how much fun everybody had putting together the genie, the character of the genie from his just absolute barrage of genius that came out. So that's kind of the energy of a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. I have not been an astrologer long enough to experience a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction myself. So there's also like an air of curiosity. I'm reading the books, I'm listening to content just like you guys and trying to understand it, looking at it in my life. So excited to explore this one a little bit. But some other things that we can expect here are, what do we have to break so that we can build? The synchronistic ultimate good and the principles that we have to hold to get there. It never turns out the way you expect it. Can you trust and believe in the process? Some of this spontaneity might be scary, could be exciting, could be awesome. The idea behind this transit is that it would lead to awesome things, but I have to imagine that some of it is a little bit in your face exhilarating. Imagine being Aladdin sitting on his carpet watching the genie. You know, when you're the person being performed to in that instance, it's got to be a lot. So I wanted to mention one more thing in history that I think is pretty cool. Copernicus's heliocentric theory of the solar system was published during a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in 1543. There's some incomplete information about whether he wrote the book that was published, which I believe was De Revolutionibus Orbium Coelestium. Forgive all of that. Or if it was written by a dude named Osiander. Because Copernicus died that same year and also suffered a stroke at some point before that. It seems to be agreed upon that the idea was originally Copernicus's and that he documented that sometime maybe in 1519. In any case, he was remembered as a brave scientist standing alone defending his, at the time, very controversial theory of course, I'm talking about the sun being in the center of the solar system rather than the Earth. Which affected a lot of belief systems, as science does push on religion a lot. And I tend to believe that they work very well together and that they inform one another. But there are viewpoints that think the opposite and denounce science, or there are scientists who denounce religion. So this is one of those situations where Jupiter-Uranus would cause this to break free. And then this idea was, of course, built upon by, I believe, Kepler. Moving on, we have the horoscopes. So I'm going to start with going through your rising signs. Just to be clear, not your sun sign. So not the day you were born during the year. It's the time that you were born at in the day, which corresponds to a rising sign and dictates the houses in your chart. So if you know your rising sign, you can listen along. I guess to tie it back to tarot here, what I typically try and do is take a look at my rising sign, the house that it's happening in, like listen to this horoscope and do a reading on the information that I give you. And I'm not gonna spend a whole lot of time delineating. I'm simply going to hit some hard points, say a quick blurb, and let you guys do the rest in your chart, because this is a slow enough moving transit that there's been some time to culminate and build. Like, imagine a person building a fire pit in their backyard. They've been building, they've been gathering materials, maybe it's taken weeks or months, or landscaping, all the projects and things that have had to come together to make this happen. And Jupiter-Uranus comes along and lights the fire. That's what I would say is how this is working. So it's very possible that you already know what this is going to, the area that this is going to revolve around in your life. So for Aries rising, this will be happening in your second house of livelihood and skills and how one makes a living. Not necessarily your job per se, but what you do in your job, more like you work for a company. What is your day to day? What are your skills? You know, what changes in how you develop and grow, in this area of life, in your skills or your livelihood? Maybe you're learning a new skill that will bring more money. For Taurus risings, this will be in your first house. This is concerning your health, your body, and mind. This includes mental health. What changes or new ideas in health concerns or personal psychology, mental health? This could be ideas about how to take care of yourself. Taurus could definitely allude to some of that. For Gemini risings, this will be in your 12th house. The 12th house is hidden challenges, illness, and undefined space. This could be a hard transit here, but overall I would say it could be illuminating to and signaling some sort of overcoming. Maybe there's been something that's been going on for a while, and maybe you're being illuminated to the solution or something like that. Or it could bring about a problem that needs to be solved. I'm just being fair to the astrology in the houses here. Cancer. This will be happening in your 11th house of friends, manifestation, groups, gathering around ideas. What may be ending to make way for something new? New friends, new groups, new clubs, something like that. Did you join a study group? Did you join a club? Are you playing D&D with a few new people now? I don't play that, but I'd kind of like to. It looks super fun. Leo, this will be happening in your 10th house. The 10th house is what we do during the day, what we're known as, the highest point of amplitude. So it's usually like work, some sort of work that you do. Or it could be like your main passion. Like maybe you work at Dick's Sporting Goods and you're also a painter or something like that. And people know you as a painter. Is there any changes or developments here? This seems like a super opportune moment for Leos. So good luck out there. Virgo, this will be in your 9th house of higher understanding and learning macro ideas versus micro. This could have to do with religion. This could have to do with school. Maybe you're going back to school or taking a course in something you're actually interested in. Be on the lookout for epiphanies, travel plans. 9th house can also be travel. For Libras, you're in the 8th house. This is a house of taxes, duties, resolutions. This could be settling up with old endeavors to start a new one. Is there anything owed to you, or do you owe anyone? Investing time or resources? Or it could be just like finally getting to do what you said you were going to do. And this can be promises that you've made to yourself. Usually this includes other people in some way. The 8th house is typically about others. This opposite the 2nd house, which is about you, yourself, and your skills. And the 8th house is usually concerning other people's resources and money as well. Scorpio, this will be in your 7th house of resting, relationships, leisure. Anything exciting on the horizon in relationships, new love interests, or sparks igniting, in a current relationship as well, or just something exciting in your leisure life. What do you do when you get home after your day? That's like the 7th house equivalent, is like after the workday is done and you're settling down for dinner or something. Sagittarius, this will be in your 6th house of sacrifice, hardship, and overcoming. Any new boulders to push up a hill, Sagittarius? This could be hard, but like the 12th house, could also point towards like a boost of energy to achieve what you want. There could be kind of a diamond in the rough, sticking with Aladdin. And what do you need to do? You need your genie. This could be your genie. Capricorn, this will be in your 5th house of joy, pleasure, creativity. This just sounds plain fun, new interests, fun projects, or exciting inspiration. Children, the 5th house is also creativity, creation. I would say that the highest form of creation could be procreation. I would say just let it happen, Capricorns. It's okay to play. Just kidding, Capricorns. I have a lot of Capricorn placements, so I know this well. Aquarius, you're in your 4th house of home or houses and family roots. Anybody moving or renovating? And kind of erring on the fun side of that rather than like for a difficult reason, like you're renovating because there was a natural disaster. I guess that could be the case, but you might be excited about a renovation like it was an excuse. Like the tree falling on the garage was an excuse to turn it into a pool or something. Family changes, new members, also children is a possibility. Mostly because of Jupiter. I know the fifth house was children, but Jupiter is also has to do a lot with children, childbirth, and that sort of thing. And last but not least, Pisces in your third house of locale, community, routine, any changes in habits or new practices or daily rituals, inspiration to make your life more full or level up in a way. Maybe a way to take control of something earthly or material in your life. The world doesn't always pitch it down the center for you, Pisces, so chin up. This pep talk is brought to you by my house full of Pisces placements. My daughter is a Pisces rising, Jacqueline is a Pisces moon, and all three of my pets are Pisces sun. Two cats and a dog. I'll like walk out to the couch and Jackie's read a sad post and my daughter's juice bottle is empty, so we're having a cry, and the dog and the cat are starved for affection, and everyone's just looking at me like on the verge of welling up, and it's okay. That's how Pisces experiences the world. But they do need some encouragement sometimes, so hang in there. All right, that's everything I have for today. Do some readings. I would love to hear how those are going. And just for our own, I guess, scientific exploration, I would love to hear how your guys' Jupiter-Uranus turned out and any big developments or anything that happened. We'd love to know about it. You can email us at awakenedtarotnashville@gmail.com. You can also take a look at our Patreon. We have some cool stuff. We post stuff up there two to three times a month, extra content, and sometimes I'll post some astrology stuff up there for you guys who are interested in a little bit more of that. Jacqueline has great stuff on Patreon and just spits some wisdom that is tarot related, of course, but she knows a lot of other stuff. She's just kind of a wealth of information. So thank you all. Please like and share this if you enjoy the podcast. So we'll see you all next time.